Hello, welcome to the Poolside Polymaths podcast,
where we dip our toes into the infinite pool of art and science.
Join us,
Merritt,
Monsi,
and Marcus for a deep dive into the creative imagination.
Welcome to the Poolside Polymath podcast with the three M's, the M cubes, Merritt, Marcus, and Monsi.
Hey.
We are here to discuss why we love challenging and complicated things.
All right, so I guess we're going to start this episode with a quote from the brilliant John von Neumann. He's really, really, really smart. There's like a really fun corner of the internet with John von Neumann stories you guys should look up. His quote is, "If people do not believe that mathematics is simple, it is only because they do not realize how complicated life is."
Wow.
What do you consider challenging and complicated?
I think that everything that has to be challenging and complicated could relate to maybe something that we didn't see as we were growing up, like not having a clear path to what is it?
Yeah, uncertainty, for sure.
Like having uncertainty to when you're deciding what you want to do, but at the same time having this sense of curiosity and wonder to what can happen if you pursue that. So, like, being able to, like, in case of, like, both of your stories, like, pursuing physics and dance or math and music, like, maybe when you started doing it, you didn't know what was going to happen if you did decide to go towards that path. And maybe it wasn't clear, it wasn't certain, but at the end, I think having that being a little bit uncertain keeps you like going forward, trying to discover what's on the other side. Like what should you do or what path should you take in order to make that happen or make your dream come true once you decide what you want to do?
Well, you know, for me, the two passions of my life, math and music, are both very challenging and very complicated. And I think it's because they are, the reason they're challenging and complicated is because they're infinite wells.
Such a great analogy. I love that.
Yeah, like one can just go as deep as you want to in math and never exhaust it. And music is the exact same way. And that makes them very challenging because you know, you have to dive deep, and they're very complicated because, you know, the depth is infinite. And that's also why I love them, because there's this permanence and there's this sense of there's always more to drink.
Yeah, deep. But it's definitely right. It's like pushing yourself to a level that you didn't think was possible. Like, I think the challenge is like pushing yourself beyond your limit, like emotionally, psychologically, physically.
Yeah.
And the complication is, Monse, exactly as you were saying, it's like the complicated part is the uncertainty and like juggling all of these uncertain factors and you know, trying to continue to put one step in front of the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of knowing like until how far should you go to know if it's something that you should be doing or not. So I think that's a, I don't know if that's part of like our personalities or like for the people that are also like listening to us from our community that love challenging and complicated things. Like what's that point in your life when you have to decide whether it's something you have, whether you should continue going forward or we should quit because it's something that you don't know if it's going to happen or not. So I think it's trying to find that balance in between, like trying to understand if it's something that you're going to be capable on doing or you're going to give it more than your 100% in order to make it happen, even though there is so much uncertainty around it.
Yeah, it's the spice of life.
Mm-hmm.
Managing sitting on top of that uncertainty, doing the work anyway. There's something very soulful about that. Having skin in the game, putting something of value, either, you know, emotionally or physically, kind of at risk for something that you believe in and something that can be of like wonderful service to, you know, your community and to humanity. It's like, yeah, there's something very, very rich about that.
What's a challenging memory that you remember? And did you love it at the moment or did you love it after the fact?
Okay, so like I remember that at the time when I was filling up my application to work for the Walt Disney Company, and after going to the interview and not getting a place in the company after working for it for 10 years and getting that rejection, it did make me like having to rethink what I wanted to do, like for the next years in my life. And at the moment, it was like, I found it super challenging trying to decide what were going to be the next steps or what did I really want to do. And I think it's part of this love of loving what you do, whatever you decide to do, that kept me going just like forward and finding inspiration on the people that were around me. And I think that's part of life, right? Like having to face challenges with resilience, and sometimes you won't have the answers in the moment and like the reason why it happens, but some points afterwards in life you'll be able to look back and being like, oh, this is the reason that it happened for it. But in the meantime, it's just like challenging and difficult sometimes to understand why some things happen.
Such wisdom there. Yeah, like if you have a dream and you get a blow like a rejection, it's like, you know, which is incredibly challenging, right? And it's finding the joy and the, you know, the grit and the persistence in to take it next step forward. Because in the moment it feels like, oh my God, that's the end.
Yeah.
But right, with retrospection, you're like, oh, actually, that was just a little blip in the road.
And I think that's the reason it's so important to enjoy the whole journey. Because if things don't go as planned, you can be like through the whole journey, through the whole experience, you did it as much as you could. And whether you get the final result you wanted or not, you still learned. You learned so much. You met people that helped you. You were able to inspire others. You found motivation in people that surrounded you. And maybe the result is not what you were expecting, but something better is going to be coming up because you're still more prepared than you were from before. So I think having to enjoy that whole process and learning from that rejection that at the end might be a redirection, not necessarily a failure, I think that's something challenging that we learn throughout life. And one of the reasons why at the end we fall in love following these challenging and complicated things, because afterwards magic happens.
Yeah, I realized in myself like that I gained so much happiness, like the most happiness when I was, something was improving or something was moving forward. And so I think, like, for instance, for auditions, I think a lot of people get discouraged because they get focused on whether or not they'll get accepted or not. But I mean, auditions, like, they're literally, there's like one spot for every like 300 people, like, and there's like one company in every per country, and there's like one spot per country. Like, it's like, it's a ridiculous, it's incredibly competitive. And I just remember being like, okay, not sure if I'll make the audition, but what's something that I can work on to improve? So even if I don't make it in this audition, and even if I don't make it as a professional ballet dancer, at least at the end of it, I can say, okay, I was pushing towards something and I was improving in some way. And so like, I would think, okay, how can, as a human, like as a person, what are the qualities I want to work on? It's like, why am I to be, you know, have incredibly generous energy or more confident or a bit spunky or, you know, respectful and respected and all of these things. And so I'd be like, okay, in this audition, I'd write down those qualities and be like, okay, I'm going to focus on these qualities. So I don't even care if they take me or not. I've spent this hour focusing on that. And at the end, I can be happy that I like was improving something. I think, you know, it's like, those little things that realizing what makes you happy. Exactly, Monse, as you were saying, like, you know, being happy in the moment, in the process of it. But it's so tricky, right? It's like, it's figuring out, right, what exactly makes you happy so that you can be happy in the moment. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good music trick too. is like,
oh yeah?
Yeah. Well, so for me, it's like if I'm learning something, so the other thing is COVID. So I'm like learning new instruments. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
I'm
not good at these instruments yet, you know? There's this one particularly, it's not complex on the back end because it's a beloved tune. I was trying to learn the break from Stevie Wonder's Sir Duke on the bass. I don't know if you're da 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 da. Anyway,
yes, the song,
yeah, Stevie Wonder. So you know, I want to learn that on the bass, and you know, it's a lot for my level of the bass. It's that's intense. And I realized, you know, I was working on it the other day, and I'm like, just, you know, kind of repeating it, and you know, there's this trick that I'll sometimes employ once I have the basics down, which is, well, let me not think about the notes. Let me attach this to a scene or a scenario or like colors or emotions like allow like the worlds related to the music to show up in the practice of this. And then it becomes a thing where I can then go into that space and like the program, like I'll just like if there's a scenery or something like that, like certain they, without analysis, it's hard to get into like what notes and what gestures mean what to me. But like if I go into that emotional space, then like the fingers play themselves more than they did if I'm just trying to execute exactly.
Yes, Marcus. Oh my God. I want to talk to you more about this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's for this episode, but that emotional, like triggering that space.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the magic happens, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And like math does that too. Like that's what I'm talking about, the infinite well. Like you can go deep into these things where it's like, oh, does this number have a personality? Well, to me, it kind of does. So I'm just going to run with it. Like I can't teach that to you. Like it might not have the same personality. It doesn't show up in the same way. You're not looking through the same filter. But like that's why it's fun and certain theorems are beautiful. Like when you hear mathematicians and physicists talk about it, this is a really beautiful idea. And if you're not initiated, then you just see like lines of equations and symbols that like may or may not make sense. Well, it's like you don't necessarily have that association either of like the raw association of I spent a lot of time to learn this and now that I understand this, all is well within my soul. Or the kind of mental tricks you used and spaces that you put yourself in order to generate like an internal representation of these ideas that's beautiful and that works with the rest of the web of the other ideas in the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Like constructing that is just that's what I mean, like infinite well. Like it's infinite, like you can do that forever. Things that are more limited or more basic, you can't do that forever. There's a finite box around how far your imagination can go in representing things.
I think that's what's missing in education, right? Is like that emotional passion for rather than being like, here are formulas. Right. Memorizing me regurgitate.
Right. We can't have your facial expression with that on the podcast, unfortunately, because that's really crucial.
Like, good. Just I've just saved people, and it's good. It's good that there's no video with this. So, how do you approach challenging and complicated things? Now that we're on the subject,
see, I think for me, there's a structural element, which is you break it down into things that are doable. And that are not complicated and challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's some things where you actually can't, they don't reduce nicely. It requires serendipity or inspiration. You can't just say, okay, cool, now I'm doing this piece of it and now this piece is done and I'm moving forward. It you know, there'll be epiphanies and realizations and you just kind of have to be internally open enough to receive that and be present and around for it. And you also have to be like present for the emotional roller coaster. Like whenever I'm working on a song or a piece of writing or anything, there's always this, I'm enthusiastic at the beginning. I might have a couple of days where no real good ideas come out. Then there'll be a time where I think I have a draft. Well, I have a draft together and I'm really excited because now I can see really clearly like the finished product and I work on the finished product some more. And then there's a moment where I'm like, this is horrible. Why would I ever think that anybody would want to listen to this? Like, I'm not a good musician at all. And then I just kind of sit through that. And eventually it's like, all right, work on it some more. And then, you know, you come to something and usually there's a moment where it's just like, there's just space. There's air in the mix.
Yeah.
Or there's a gel. There's a certain viscosity to the composition This is like, oh, we're done now. Okay. And even there's always going to be the doubt of like, all right, I want this to be well received by my community. But mm-hmm. even then, like, there are points where it's like, even if this isn't the best thing ever and like it falls short of my like perfect ideal, it's like, this is complete and I'm good with this and I'm proud of this and like it's done. I can give this out. That's kind of my approach.
But it's those different layers. It's like that understanding. And as much as I think one can try to explain it, of like, look, you'll go through this euphoria of like improvement and then you're going to hit this plateau, which is pretty mm-hmm. depressing. And then you might even get worse. Right. And then actually the moment when you're improving, you feel like you're the worst mm-hmm. you've ever been because you've gained, because you're now more aware of what actually is good or bad. Whereas before, when you were bad, you were clueless and thought you were amazing. Like, there are all these, like, you know, and this is why so often I get like confused when I'm talking to like mentors and teachers. I'm like, I can't tell. Like, I actually kind of feel good, which I'm worried because that means I might be really bad right now. I can't. Like, it's hard to gauge that. But like all those ups and downs, and like, but I think the more times you go through that, and if you stick it through, then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. I know this routine. Like, mm-hmm. we've been mm-hmm. here before. Okay, just right. put in the hours, step by step. I'm in the process. I'm in exactly that point, Marcus, right now, of feeling yeah. like, oh my god, like
what am I doing? Worst thing I've,
what am I doing?
Yeah,
and I'm just like putting the clock on. I'm like, okay, Matt, you can't leave.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
studio. Well, for me right now,
yeah, it's that timer.
Right, it's just putting friend. In the hours. You have to put in the. I'm like, Merritt, 3 hours. You're not allowed to like. Leave.
Like, yeah. And I think that's the importance, right? Like, throughout the process, like, understanding that it's going to be ups and downs. And even before you start doing, whatever you decide to start doing, whether that's a project or a career or whatever it is, like, knowing, like, being fully aware that there will be days where you feel like you're a rock star and other days that you'll be like, why did I choose this? And knowing that it's okay, like, you will have those doubts, and those doubts are super helpful for you to rethink and like the reason why you're doing what you want to do, like redefining your purpose and seeing how you can become a better person by doing what you do. So I think, yeah, well, that's part of the journey.
Yeah. So what led you to pursue a challenging and complicated path?
I can't not do these things. Like my life in general just kind of falls apart if I don't do enough math or music. Even if I'm in a space where I'm doing one and not the other, like part of me is just very, very sad. And or if I get stuck in like an admin hole where I can't really do much math or music, I'm like sending a lot of emails or doing a lot of stuff that's moving things forward but is not really connected to my creativity, then I just get very sad and like then everything starts to get dysfunctional. So it's like, all right, I better learn how to deal with these very challenging and complicated things, because otherwise Marcus isn't going to work very well.
I don't think I choose it particularly because it's challenging and complicated. I mean, I've grown to love challenging and complicated things, but I think there's just like, as Marcus said, like there's this stubborn, rebellious nature in me that's like, if I like dance and I like physics, my golly, I'm going to do dance and physics. Like, like we're going to make this very uncomplicated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to do both. Like, like it's uncomplicated in my head. I like yeah. it, so I'm going to do it.
Right.
Also, like being able to open these new paths for others, I think that's something that really, like personally, it pushes me a lot. So if I am able to do something that hasn't been done by someone, whether that's close to me or just like speaking generally, if I'm trying to do something that seems to be, yes, complicated or challenging or however other people might see it or see it myself, if I'm going to somehow be able to open a new path for people that are coming after me, I think that's something that I found really motivating, because the same way that other people have opened new paths, and in this way I can like relate a lot to the work that I do with women and girls. Like, there are so many other women and girls that have opened paths for me to be able to be where I'm at today, or being able to work in the projects that I work in, or getting the opportunities that I get, if now I'm able to pass this energy forward and open new paths for other girls, I think that's something that I'm willing to take a risk for in order to help other people pursue what they love and pursue mm-hmm. their dreams and pursue their purpose in life.
Yeah, that's really inspiring, is thinking about the potential for others to what possibilities you open up for others based on your work. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, like kind of like how other people have done it for you, right? Like how people, the same way that you find inspiring your role models or your mentors or whatever it is, they are opening paths for you. So now, like, how are you going to open those new paths for others? Whether that's like paths in their minds, or like literal paths in developing new types of careers or whatever it is. I think I find that even not as a responsibility, but as something that we get to do, not something that we have to, but something that we get to do because we found what we're passionate about. There's so many people that haven't been able to find what they're passionate about. And if we can spark that in someone else, I think that's something that we get to do. So, so yeah, that's definitely something that
beautiful.
Completely leads me to do what we do.
But okay, can we talk about doubts?
Yes, of course.
Sure.
I'm curious, Marcus, when is the time that you felt the most doubts, or, yeah, and how'd you overcome them?
It's cyclical. I feel doubts all the time, even till now.
Felt doubts like
yesterday. It's
because we're human,
right?
It's all, yeah.
Well, and see, like, I know for me, a lot of the doubt comes from setting and resetting expectations. I can say that it's like a relationship between doubt and expectation. Part of the problem is that, you know, the mathematician side of me wants to be like John von Neumann.
Mm-hmm.
And the musician side of me wants to be like John Coltrane. John Coltrane would practice for 14 hours a day. John von Neumann was doing math all the time. He's like one of the most, like, at that subject, like, he's one of the most brilliant people in history. And so there's like a thing that I had to come to realization. It's like, I'm not going to be both of those people. Right, like that's not the capacity I have. That's not the gift I've been.
Yeah, that 24 hours, not 28. Sorry, Marcus.
Yeah, yeah.
Hours in the day.
Right, and I'm not like that guy. I'm great enough that I can do both. And equals no. That's not what's happening. So you know, kind of, but then when you say, all right, well, I have this kind of unusual intersection of gifts. Like, where does that live? Mm-hmm. I have fewer, like, people to look to in terms of, oh, here's a thing to aspire to. Here's how I can, like, model my career after. Here are people doing similar work that I can kind of imitate, or, like, feel like I can get, I can be inspired by very directly. And so, you know, the figuring out what actually lives at the intersection of math and music, what it takes to mine that, which is, from my perspective, still unknown and very alive, and what I have to sacrifice in terms of the dream of being a pure musician of the highest caliber, like a pure mathematician of the highest caliber, of like the caliber of like my heroes. So I know for me, like, lots of the doubts end up showing themselves like, what are my expectations of myself, and are they too high? But then there are other doubts, like there's a practical sense of, well, how does one make a living being into this kind of thing? Am I doing concerts? Am I doing research papers? Am I playing gigs?
Especially in a time of COVID, right? When everything's uncertain and changing, like, I'm sure. It's funny, like, I feel like it's a vulnerability to share that you have doubts, but I mean, times of uncertainty, like, it's just a human.
It's a good day today.
Feeling that it's inevitable.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that I remember there was one moment where I was, I didn't feel like I was getting to where I wanted to go with the saxophone and with music in general. And I had, you know, briefly worked at a firm, at a hedge fund that, you know, paid me a lot of money. So I knew I could do something. I had the capacity to do something like that. And I wasn't around. I hadn't yet found a tribe where my mathematician side could live. The hedge fund thing?
Yeah.
Oh, like 5 months. That was really quick.
You're like, that wasn't long at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I knew very quickly that I was a creative person. I didn't feel like I belonged there. I wanted to try it for a little bit more, but I just found that it's like when I'm deeply out of alignment with myself, like I just get dysfunctional. Yeah. Like I'm not good at stuff. All of my gifts just kind of go flat. So, that didn't work out so well. But when I went to when I came to New York, you know, I'm jumping in the music scene. I'm thinking, oh, I'm around musicians, but I had this whole other side, and there's not like a community of people who I can like go talk to about like the Hawking-Penrose debates, or you know, talk about proofs for the like the irrationality of pi and the transcendental quality of like pi and e and like that kind of thing. Like all of that stuff is kind of like shut away, and I'm feeling like deeply unfulfilled. And you know, as in any scene, there are just, you know, as a social scene, there's like, you know, the politics and the trends that people care about and that might not align with like what I'm super into. And so I remember there was one night where I was feeling very out of place, and I was like, you know what, I could sell this horn and buy a GMAT prep course tomorrow, and I would do fine on that. And I could go to a business school like later for this. I tried it; it's too hard. And there's one musician who's a mentor of mine to this day, named Eric Lewis. He comes in and plays the piano, and I'm like, nope. That thing, he just did a thing to me.
Something moved.
That made me come back to and give up this idea. I actually have to learn how to do that to people. Like I can't like that. That's what I'm doing with music. And so, you know, there are times when serendipity pulls me out of a space of doubt. There are times when I happen to find I happen to find like tribes or groups of people or different communities where where I could be more of myself or explore different sides of myself. And that would pull me out of doubt, because it would like a bunch of things that I thought were just quirky and didn't really have a place, like all of a sudden have worth. And all of a sudden have like a place to land. And so that took me out of doubt. And all of these things are like progressions, like each of them came at different parts of my career. But no, managing doubt, managing expectation, figuring out the macro, where does this actually go to in the face of maybe not a clear, defined existing path, and then figuring out the logistics of it. And like, okay, cool. Even if I have a clear idea, how do I get it done? What are the steps?
Yeah. Being pragmatic like, about it. Yeah.
All of that is, you know, it's part of the thing. And so the doubts are very much alive, and you just kind of do the work anyway, is my approach to it. Like sometimes I'm just going to be grumpy and gloomy, and I'm going to do the work. And then soon enough, there'll be a turnaround, an opportunity will show up, or I'll have a moment of clarity. And then I'll do the work again. And then, like, it doesn't matter. Like, just keep showing up to the work. And
Keep showing up. Yeah, because I think it's like we're human. And so it's being like, okay, accepting, look, we're going to feel the doubts.
Exactly.
But just as long as they don't stop our actions,
mm-hmm.
I think is the important thing. And being like, we're going to feel the doubts. There's going to be uncertainty. But, you know, keeping, as you said, Marcus, like, keep showing up. One step in front of the other.
And it's not like something you can research. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I do this complicated thing that I want to do? Or many times.
Is this possible? Is it going to work out?
Yeah. It's like, who do I ask?
But often for like training for the dance and physics, I mean, that was years, probably 6 solid years of morning to night, hard work in both, not knowing if I'd ever make it as a professional ballet dancer or make it in physics. And also with the doubts of like everyone saying is impossible, one. B, also the fact that I'm doing dance minimizing my chances of becoming a physicist, and the fact that I'm doing physics minimizing the chance of doing dance. And so that was like added doubt. And then like, you know, shooting myself in the foot twice. But I think what helped me through that was fear of regret. Like, there were so many adults who had come to me and being like, oh, you dance. I used to dance. I'm so, you know, I quit. I don't know why I quit. Like, oh, I regret that I quit. I didn't think I was good, but I was good. Right? Yeah. Like, how Marcus is smiling. Marcus is like, yep.
Yeah.
And there was enough, you know, I don't know. I heard that enough times from adults where I was like, okay, if there's anything I do, the one thing I'm going to do is to give it my all so that even if this doesn't work out, I'm not later in life being like, oh, I wish I had pushed a little more. I was like, that's the one thing is. So I was just like, I want to be 50, 60 on a beach with a cocktail in my hand, looking back, being like, Merit, you gave it your all. If it didn't work out, like, you can relax now. When the opportunity was
there. Wait, 50, 60 on the beach? Weren't you like, you was on the beach like 3 days
ago? Yeah, I was there. But I was working my butt off when I was at the beach. Like, I was training and... There are things I'm training for that are coming up. I mean, lying on the beach without having to do work or bring
having the pressure this
weekend. Oh, it was like the most wonderful sunset cruise, like romantic everything. And I had a deadline in an hour, and kindly had to bring my computer onto this like boat. Anyway, yes. So the work is still on, but.
Yes. Yeah, it was that Kanye line. It's like, when living is way harder than dying is, but giving up's way harder than trying is. So it was like that thing.
Yeah, something like Kanye that. Wisdom in oh, and you know what? Like, just like coming back quickly with the doubts. I'm not sure if it has happened to you, but sometimes you think, like this happened to me when I was like changing my major, when I changed from engineering to business school. That I was like really afraid of like making a mistake, right? Like on going to business school when I was already studying something that was supposed to be like harder or that it required like more time, things like that. And I thought that when I would switch careers, people would be like, "Mostly, like, why did you change? Like you were doing so great before in engineering school." But like when I switched, people were just like, oh, like, I'm so glad that you switched to something that you liked better. And I was just, like, so afraid of what would, like, my parents think or what would my teachers, like, trying to fill other people's expectations. And after I did that and I realized that, we shouldn't care of what other people are expecting from us. Like, I do think that they sometimes help as motivation or to just, like, keep pushing forward. But at the moment of making decisions, like having the doubt because of other people's expectations, I think it should be something that we should learn from an early age so we don't make mistakes that we aren't supposed to be taking as we're growing up.
So how do you guys maintain focus? Or who do you build your tribe around?
Yeah, I was gonna go to the same topic because for me, they're related, right? Like the stabilizing element is the people I keep around me. And I think that for me, there were lots of communities that I was involved in, and sometimes they overlap, but oftentimes they didn't. And none of them felt like I could do all of the things that I wanted to do and be like the whole person I wanted to be in the space. And whereas like I learned like really important and valuable lessons from everyone. And it's like there are lots of people that I still cherish. But I know for me, there was a big turning point where I decided to kind of create my own. And there were musicians who also had disparate interests, who wanted to be more productive, who wanted to make their mark in the world as more than just musicians who played on the New York scene, whether they wanted to become bigger as musicians or whether they wanted to also make inroads in business or develop their hobbies to a professional or semi-professional level. And so I got like a crew of my friends together a couple of years ago, and we just started studying out of like books, productivity books for like from venture capitalists and entrepreneurs and that kind of thing to, you know, setting smart goals and managing your energy and like journaling and these kinds of techniques that are really in vogue in like the millennial generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was super edifying to me. And I think to everybody, one, having the tribe like that and then seeing everybody succeed, you know, seeing one of my friends, he he's always been like a big man. He was insecure about his weight, so he started working out, and then he got so serious about working out that he started becoming a competing weightlifter, and he's won like a couple of gold medals. And it was like, you know, we all kind of like pushed him to do that. Or having one friend who had been mostly a professional sideman, but he wanted to have his own project, never just got it together. But like with the power of the group, he's like, no, I'm just going to get this together. Records his band pre-COVID. They're touring all over the country. Post-COVID, or not really post-COVID, but like now things are starting to open up in New York a little bit. So he like goes and records two projects. He's kind of been back on the scene since January. Records two projects. They're both like ready to go. He's shopping them around. Or, you know, another friend who was able to quit an unsatisfying day job and like compose like crazy. Another friend who was able to stop drinking. Mm-hmm. And then he got and ended up releasing his album and is like now up for an NAACP Image Award, like all these kinds of things. So it's like that kind of thing, having it so that my friends and the people closest to me, I mean this team too, like go on the website, the resumes are savage. But you know, like making sure that, you know, all the people close to me continually inspire me. So I don't really have room to slack off is a really nice container. And then there are, you know, the kind of standard productivity hacks about you know, scheduling every minute of your day, like making sure there's enough kind of deep work in it, different programs that keep you organized, because I'm kind of like heady and scatterbrained. Like I'm not good with like documents and like forms and things like that. So I need like external tools to keep that alive for me.
What external tools do you use?
Well, you hit me to Notion. So
it's good,
Notion,
right?
Is great. Trello is good. Trello is really good if you have a team, especially because you can like gamify the done pile. So that's really fun. And then I'm big on analog. I'm big on writing things by hand. I just feel it's more soulful. So I keep a notebook where I write down ideas, and I write down my schedule. And then, you know, I have another notebook where I'm, you know, just full of like math and physics problems and ideas and things that I've copied out of books and like things that I'm trying to learn. So I guess those are some of the standard tools. And then for me, like meditation, I spend a lot of time, in meditation. I feel like having the space for, phenomena that seem unusual in life, I think that's really important. There's a line between like going full, like this is my philosophy and the way, you know, one orients their life around certain kind of new agey ideas or religious ideas, and I'm not there, but I think but I try to keep that space open, because, you know, for me just a lot of magic happens there, and if I close it off with too much rationality or no kind of acknowledgement that, you know, there are these kind of these large things may be afoot, then my life seems to get smaller. Yep. How do you stay focused, Merritt?
I think part of the reason I've been able to pursue physics and dance is because I'm a bit of like, unfocused. And so having something to distract me gets me focused on the other thing. You know what I mean? Like,
no, say more on this. This is very fascinating.
So I think I literally, when I'm like, I could only have been a ballet dancer because I was a physicist, and physicist because I was a ballet dancer, is I think there's like a inner laziness and procrastination and distracted. Like, so there are a couple things that keep me focused. One is definitely, I think by pursuing two things, one, my appreciation for the other increases. Like if I've got blisters on my feet and I'm injured, like I am so excited to sit down with a physics book and just excited to kind of not move ever again. Yeah. And then, you know, and then I'm in the lab and I'm like standing over this quantum optics experiment for hours, or like sitting for hours. Like, man, I am so excited to go dance, like turn on the music and just let it rip. Right. So I think in those senses, it's kept me focused, because one kind of increases the appreciation for the other. So whenever I jump from one field to the other, I'm intensely appreciative and intensely focused on it. And the other things I think is having that vision and that dream of you know, what if, you know, can I, you know, let's just dreaming big and being like, ooh, what would it take to get there? And like, do I have it? Can I do it? Like, that's what I like, that's, and then like kind of working backwards, being like, okay, so what would I need in order to get, meet that milestone? Okay. How do I get there? Like, what are the little steps? And okay, can I do a step today? Is definitely how I stay focused when the going is tough.
Mm-hmm.
But as you were saying, Marcus, like tribe is so important. And actually, I just experienced this recently, and I forgot, because I think I'm very careful about who's in my tribe and who I keep close to me. But I was experiencing someone who was kind of being like a bit judgmental and trying to put their belief systems on me of like what they thought was right, or like, you know, right way of doing things, right amount of work to do, right things. And I was like, whoa, I haven't experienced this for a long time, but it reminded me of, you know, of childhood being like, oh, right. People are very eager to be forceful and loud about what they believe is right, especially if they're insecure. And it was just a quick reminder being like, huh, right. That's also why it's important to keep a strong, inspiring, at Marcus, as you said, tribe around you, because, you know, I think as strong as you try to be, like, it's easier not to listen if you don't hear the voice.
Yeah.
In order.
And understanding that other people's limitations shouldn't be yours, like not taking them as yours, and also like kind of respecting and being like, okay, like that's how you believe, this is how I believe. And then like, and actually like this can also connect to when people are like, hey, like you won't be able to do this, and then you're just like, let me show you how it's done. And once you do it, it's not only for your, like, of course it's for yourself, but then that way you can also somehow have an impact on this other person that said that you were not going to be able to do it, and they'll be like, oh, like if she did it, he did it, maybe I can do it too.
All right, and that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Let us know why you love challenging and complicated things at SciArt Party on Instagram or Facebook. See you next time.
Thank you, guys. See you next time.
See ya. We'd like to take a moment to thank you, the listener, for joining us on this week's episode of the Poolside Polymaths podcast. A big thank you goes to our writers and our production team, Matt, Trish, Pavan, Louis, and Flavio. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn at SciArt Party. For more content on the topics covered in this episode, check out our website, www.sciartparty.com. Make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you listen to your favorite podcasts, and join us next time for more conversations by the poolside.